Luke 15, 1 through 3, and 11 through 32. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the wealth that will belong to me." So he divided his assets between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant region. And there he squandered his wealth in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that region, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that region, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of the hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. As he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The word of the Lord. Please be seated. We are now going to dismiss our children to junior worship. Let's sing them out.
Now, there we are. I love it. That's like a universal language too. Talking about words a couple weeks ago that everyone across the world says the same. That's got to be one of them. Karen, thanks for your welcome into worship. I so appreciate the way you emphasize that welcome isn't just a thing we do to get people to sit down. It's part of our worship to God. Thank you for that. Sarah, I was thinking when you were leading your prayer about the paths I've wandered down by not going anywhere. You know, the paths I've wandered down because I stayed still. And I really appreciate you leading us through that thoughtful meditation and prayer. And thanks, worship team, of course, for the songs leading us into today's passage about the prodigal son. The servant replied, "Your brother has come, and your father is throwing a party." And the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So maybe we should start here. He's not wrong. Perhaps that is the best place to begin today. The elder brother is not wrong. And I wonder if you noticed that as Pete read the parable today. When that older brother complains, that neither he nor his brother are getting what they deserve, he's not wrong. The younger brother embarrasses the family, squanders his inheritance. The older brother, faithfully and diligently, does all that's asked of him. The younger son comes home, not necessarily because he's sorry, but because he's hungry. The elder son comes home after working in the fields all day and completing all that's necessary to sustain the livelihood of the farm. And even so, Luke tells us that while the younger son is still far off, the father runs. He runs and kisses the boy, covered as he was in pig poo and all. He kisses him and forgives him. And yet, that same father, it seems, can't even be bothered to walk out into the fields to tell the older boy what's going on. And then, as if to add insult to injury, the father slaughters the older brother's prized calf to throw the younger brother a feast, complete with dancing, music, the works, all without consulting the one son who's actually been with him all along. The faithful one, the good one, the only one who, by all accounts, actually deserves a banquet in his name. So again, it bears repeating. He's not wrong. But neither is he the hero of this story. And that, I suggest, is precisely Jesus' point. But let me see if I can explain. There's this old Hebrew word. Perhaps you've heard it before. An ancient Hebrew word, ketzatza. Admittedly, it is not the most familiar word in the world, not the easiest to pronounce. Ketzatza. A peculiar word, but it is an essential one if we're to fully understand what is going on in the context of this particular parable. You see, ketzatza is this ancient word that the rabbis describe like this. It is a ceremony for severing connections. Most of us are familiar, of course, with ceremony for making connections, like a marriage ceremony, connecting one human with another, like an ordination ceremony, connecting a pastor with their people, or a baptismal ceremony, connecting a human with their God and their community. All of these are familiar ceremonies for making connections. But we're a good deal less familiar with ceremonies for severing them. Now, note, by the way, this isn't a ceremony for after a connection has been severed. You may want to do that. But this is a ceremony for actually severing connections. So, enter the notion of ketzatza. Ketzatza is quite literally a liturgy to divorce. The word itself actually means cutting off. And according to the rabbis, the ceremony was used as a mean for cutting off a member from a community, those who brought disgrace to a family, a clan, a village, or a town were excised from their community, the way a gangrenous toe might be excised from the body. Cut off. Ketzatza. And like nearly everything else in Jewish culture, a ketzatza ceremony is a mixture of symbolism and public act. It went like this. The community would come together in the village square, carrying their earthenware jars and jugs and pots and dishes. And they would smash them at the feet of the offending party and then shout out for all to hear, and I'm quoting the rabbis here, "O brethren of the house of Israel, give ear. Our brother has committed offense against us. His seed shall no longer mingle with our own. Come and take up for yourselves a sign for the generations to come, for he is cut off from our people." And then the community would gather those serrated shards that were laying on the ground in the public square. symbolizing both the broken relations between the offender and the community, and symbolizing also, in their sharpness, the knife that was used to do the cutting. I wonder if you can imagine being at the end of one of these public ceremonies, the ketzatzah. Now, ketzatzah was particularly common, mainly talked about in ancient Israelite literature, for those who married a so-called unsuitable partner. Unsuitable in this case being a euphemism for a person of disrepute, for whatever reason, social status, race, various proclivities, etc. Whatever reason they thought was unsuitable. In fact, it's possible, side note here, that Joseph, Mary's husband, actually experienced some sort of ketzatzah himself when he chose to marry a woman already many months pregnant. Or, for the Shakespeare fans among us, ketzatzah is what occurs when Romeo Montague attempts to marry Juliet Capulet. But here's the intriguing bit, and the part that leads us back to our parable today. The coupling of unsuitable partners, as they called it, was the primary, but not the only cause for a community to throw a ketzatzah ceremony. Another reason a community might ketzatzah someone, in fact, the only other reason even mentioned in the literature is, I wonder if you can guess, squandering away one's inheritance. How about that? You can harm your people by marrying the wrong boy, or you can harm your people by breaking the cycle of land inheritance within family and village and clan. And that, it just so happens, is precisely what the younger son in today's parable has done. And everybody in the village knows it. Not only has he insulted his father by essentially saying, and perhaps you noted this, by essentially saying to his dad, "I wish you were dead." An inheritance is something you usually only get after the father has died. But even worse, he lost that inheritance in, as Luke puts it, dissolute living to a group of pig-loving Gentiles. If ever there was a candidate for a ketzatzah, this boy was it. So, now, after all that, after the embarrassment and dishonor he has brought on his family, now, because he's hungry and can't afford any more food, now, because he has no other options, now, he wants to finally come home. And you can almost see in your mind's eye the community getting their earthenware jars ready. "Let him come," they say. "We'll be ready when he does." And yet, just here, while the sun is still far off, Jesus' story takes its rather surprising twist. Before anyone in that village was able to break a single pot, our passage declares that this boy's father ran, which is the first sign that Jesus is up to something here. Perhaps you remember this. I think we've talked about running before in ancient Israelite culture. No respectable adult ever ran in their culture. Running was for children. Running was for servants. Running was for the so-called disreputables of their world. To run as a landowner would be to sacrifice one's honor in a culture where your honor was worth more than gold. And yet, Jesus says, that father ran. And why? Because, frankly, his honor means nothing to him compared to that boy. So he races by foot to him to ensure that he reaches the boy before anyone else in that village has a chance to throw even one of those godforsaken pots. "Hurry," he says, nearly breathless. "Get the robe and the signet ring. Get him sandals too." At which point the son, as you recall, tries to speak, but the father interrupts him with kisses, even though he still reeks of manure. And then he says, "Quickly, get the fatted calf, play the music, begin the dance." And he throws that boy a banquet of welcome before the townspeople can throw him out. And so they began, Jesus says, to celebrate, because there will be no ketzatza today. Reconciliation triumphs over revenge. Compassion triumphs over cutting off. Now, Jesus, of course, could have ended his parable right there, and what a sweet little parable it would have been. But he doesn't. Significantly, he does not end it there. For this is a tale of two sons, both of whom were surely expecting some form of ketzatza today, but only one of whom is delighted it hasn't occurred. Such that when the older son hears the music and the merriment that's been thrown together sometime before leaving to the fields and coming back in, and when he learns what it is all about, that older son is, as you know, incensed. That self-centered, swine-like, sin-sick brother of his, who has cost his family so much grief, not to mention fortune, has been welcomed home without so much as a single cracked bowl or cup. And when his father comes out to explain, the older son disowns them both. "This son of yours," the elder brother says, excluding himself from their family, "this son of yours is no kin to me, nor am I akin to you, if you're going to choose that over me." The father's kindness is rewarded today with contempt. After losing his younger son to a life of recklessness, this father is now on the verge of losing the older one to a life of angry self-righteousness, a life that takes him so far away from who their family is trying to be, he might as well, as one theologian puts it, be feeding pigs in a far-off country. And just there, we finally get to Jesus' point. You see, the elder son wants his father to love him as he deserves to be loved, because he has stayed put, because he has followed orders, because he has always done the right thing. He wants his father to love him for all of that. And of course, his father does love him, but not for any of the reasons he's just listed. No more than he loves the younger son for what he has done. The fact is, the father does not love either of them according to what they deserve. And that, it seems, is Jesus' entire point. But for the elder brother, it simply makes no sense. For he cannot abide a love that transcends right and wrong. A love that throws homecoming parties for prodigal sinners and expects the hardworking righteous to, what, rejoice? He cannot stand it. And so, he stands outside, alone, in his own self-imposed ketzatza, cut off from the only love that actually matters. In fact, as a side note, as an alternative perspective on our artwork this morning, we might even suggest that that's actually the older brother we see depicted in Ilona Shimkit's image, isolated and alone in his unwillingness to welcome. And yet here's the thing. Here's the significant thing. That guy's not wrong. The elder brother is not wrong. But Turns out that doesn't make him right either. And that, I believe, is just what Jesus is trying to get at. When it comes to who's right and who's wrong in a fractured relationship, it appears that Jesus believes whoever seeks out restored relationship, regardless of fault, is the one most closely aligned with God's righteousness. A lesson, no doubt, every Christian, of every political stripe, of every regional loyalty, of every moral persuasion, of every race and national identity, probably needs to hear. To be right is to pursue relationship, restoration from estrangement. He's not wrong. And no doubt Jesus and everyone listening to this parable knows it. And that is the entire point. And it's also why Jesus' audiences, then and now, have found this particular parable as hard to put into practice as anything Jesus has ever said. For in the end, the question, according to Jesus, is not who's more at fault than the other in our conflict, but rather, who's willing to open themselves up to a restored relationship. The lesson of the prodigal father, prodigal meaning reckless and wild in his ambitions, the lesson of the prodigal father is that ketzatza has no place in God's new creation. So, one last thing. Curiously, you may have noticed, Jesus does not tell us how this story turns out. We're left right here with this image above us. His parable ends with the elder brother still standing alone in the field while a party takes place inside. And Jesus leaves it that way, I think, because ultimately, this is not a story about two brothers or even about the Pharisees who asked him the question in the first place. It's a story, of course, about us. And in the end, it's up to us, each one of us, to finish this parable. It's up to each one of us to decide in our own hearts and lives whether we will stand outside all alone being right or enter into the mix of messy relationships with others, right and wrong. Setting aside our inclinations towards ketzatza so that we might take our place at a table full of saints and scoundrels, reckless and righteous alike, brothers and sisters, united only by our relationship to a loving God who does not give us the love we deserve, but ultimately and significantly gives us the love we need. And may all God's children do the same. Amen.